Thanks for listening to The Drive with Big Al and D-Mac, on demand, brought to you by SEL Mortgage, the leaders in Colorado of special circumstance lending, helping everyone, including people with unusual financing needs. Locally owned and operated. Visit MySpecialMortgage.com. That's MySpecialMortgage.com.
It's a Reaction Monday, brought to you by First Bank. 104.3 The Fan presents Big Al and D-Mac with the big story of the day.
Third and goal. Stopped him, but Keenum gets to the end zone. We'll try this one from 44, Colby Wadman. The punter is the holder. And McManus knocks it through. First and 10, Mayfield. Intercepted. Threw it towards Landry in the middle of the field. And Ramondre Thomas has come up with the interception. Mayfield is pressured, and you don't need a corner when you have the all-time Broncos sack leader, Von Miller, gets the record. To back this up to 29. 2-for-2 so far for McManus. And he makes it 3-for-3 on the night. 4:36 left. First and goal of Cleveland for the lead. Mayfield. Touchdown. Callaway. Rookie to rookie. And the Browns take the fourth quarter. On his final play. Fourth and 10. 43 seconds remaining. There it comes. Free runner. He is sacked by Jabril. Broncos lose. They are 6-8. If Denver does not win against Oakland on Monday Night Football next week, which might be the last ever game in Oakland, that stadium at least, or beat the Chargers week 17, the Broncos will have back-to-back losing seasons for the first time since 71-72.
Where are all those calls from, Dick Sexy? Who's that from? Is that from TV? I don't even recognize that guy. Anyways, Broncos lose, but that's hardly NFL. That's right. That's why it's weird. Right. NFL Network. Wait, that wasn't Tirico, though, was it? Is that my boy? No, it wasn't Tirico, was it? No. Tirico's my guy. My guy. Go way back with Mikey. Good old Mikey Tirico and D-Mackey back in the day. 104.7 Kix FM. Classic rock of Central New York. That was the Mike and I, even though we were at Syracuse at the same time, we actually did not work together on the college radio station. We worked together on the a classic rock station. I was the producer of the morning show, and Mike was the sports anchor. That's how that works. Anyways, that is Tirico? Oh, let me hear.
The Broncos lose. They are 6-8.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Tirico, Kurt Warner, and Peter Schrager on the call.
Not recognizing my guy's voice.
25, it's Chubb to the left, and Chubb in the clear. Midfield, safety to beat. Chubb brought down inside the 35-yard line. They ripped the big run. Justin Simmons makes the tackle.
Sorry. Gain of 40. Obviously, Mike Tirico, my guy. Now, the story of the day is, and it's definitely not Woody versus Mike. It is two stories about a story. And the truth, the exact truth sometimes lies somewhere in between. However, what's important to know is that do I trust the sources Woody talks to? Yeah. Yeah, I do. Do I trust the sources Mike Kliss talks to? Yep. Definitely. And what reporters do is they use credible sources to tell a story. But you can only tell the story from the source's point of view. And depending on your point of view or your agenda or what you're doing, sometimes the same story may feel different. In this particular circumstance, there are some common threads. And sometimes stories actually change through the course of how a story is played out. So the general story is, was there conversations between John Elway and Mike Shanahan about Mike becoming the head coach? There is nobody denying that. Nobody. Zero. If anything, Woody was anticipating some sort of denial by the Broncos on. Didn't happen. Instead, there was an article by Mike Kliss that had just a slightly different point of view. But Mike's a great reporter. And I am 1,000% sure that the sources that he was talking to was their side of the story. And I'm positive that the sources Woody were talking to were telling their version of the truth. And that Stephen Colbert, right, has that great word, truthiness. And throughout this entire story, there's truthiness going on. So as the story evolves, Alfred, hi, how are you, my man? Good. As the story evolves, there is... Oh, there you are. Can you hear me?
Yeah, man. It's just a weird day going right now.
I'm glad you're with us.
Thank you, bro.
Al's in Houston. I mean, I think it's fair to say that. So.
Oh, yeah. Visiting mom and just had some technical difficulty to start off, but great, great day here in Houston to visit my mom, and things are getting much better.
Good. Good, like good, good. Man. Happy to hear that. It's a beautiful day here in Denver as well, but there's some clouds over Dove Valley, that's for sure.
Well, D-Mac, you know, we talked about this last Thursday after...
we did.
After we got wind of it, and we couldn't really say much because we don't do investigative work, but there's some good people out there that do, and the clouds happen because of losses and the possibility of having or would have had... a new quarterback, which also brings a new head coach.
Now, let me bring you up to the second details of how things are sort of being spun here this afternoon. There's a vibe out there, and I can see where it's coming from, that makes Joe Ellis just look like the world's worst person. And I promise you, it's not as clear cut as John saying, I want Mike Shanahan, and Joe saying no. I feel very confident that it's more like John saying, hey, what do you think about Mike? Joe saying, not my first choice, but I really need you to go through an entire process. We just can't switch out one guy for Mike Shanahan. If you really feel strongly about that, then we need to dismiss Vance Joseph and have a thorough search.
You meaning the Rooney Rule and everything else that goes with...
That's right.
...hiring a new head coach.
That's right. If Joe Ellis is one thing, he knows what the rules are, and Joe is a businessman. Now, Joe just does not have a history of interfering with football decisions. It's not that Joe wouldn't put his foot down, but generally Joe puts his foot down when it comes to financial matters or things that sort of go beyond just things that happen on the football field. So it is well within... the parameters of Joe Ellis to insist that John Elway go through a process.
Correct.
Right?
Yes.
And to say that John just said, hey, you know, it's got to be Mike, and Joe said, no way, you do something else, I just don't think is realistic. What is much more realistic is that John soft-sold the idea of Shanahan to Joe. It is much more realistic that Joe didn't just sign off on it immediately, but he didn't necessarily totally discount it, even though I think it's pretty fair to say Mike would never be the first person Joe Ellis would think of. But I think it's also fair to say if John really wanted it, Al, if he really, really wanted Mike Shanahan, then they would have fired Vance Joseph, and they would have interviewed Mike Shanahan as well as other candidates through the Rooney Rule or other. They would have had a thorough search. I think it's fair to say that's what Joe really wanted to happen. So the way it's being played out today, that it was this all or nothing thing, I just think is incorrect. However, you can see where there's wiggle room there. For example, how is Mike Shanahan seeing this? Now, Mike Shanahan may have left that meeting with John Elway and felt like, we got a deal, right? Like, we had a great conversation. We've mended our fences. We've had a social conversation, and we all know how social conversations tend to play out. We all understand how that may go. And there's no doubt that there might be a thought that Mike thought it was a lot more of a done deal or a certain possibility than John thought. There's that possibility too, Al. And that's
we haven't heard from Coach, so what do we say to that?
Well, here's what I'll say. This was the worst kept secret for the past week and a half of anything I've known, okay? I mean, I cannot even tell you how many people were talking to me about this story. I mean, it was preposterous. And I really do think Woody did put it out there because somebody was about to put it out there. And I think as a great writer, it stinks, you know, having big stories, you know, you get beat on big stories by somebody else. So I think it was to that tipping point. I mean, Al, we were talking about this on Thursday. I mean, that's why I've told the listening audience, sometimes when we're telling you things, you got to read between the lines a little bit. Go back and listen to our show on Thursday and tell me that we weren't really telling you what was going on. But like you said, that's not really our role. We're more like reacting to the stories than breaking them. But listen, man, I mean, it was ridiculous. So many people were talking about this. And sure enough, today, you didn't hear the Broncos deny it. You had the Broncos support the story. You can pick apart the minutiae. Oh, he was eating in a back room. Oh, no, they were eating on a patio. They were, you know, he was wearing a red shirt. You know, it was really kind of like fire engine red, not completely red.
It was a blue suit, not a black one.
It was a blue, yeah, but it was the dark. I thought it was blue. No, it was black. I mean, these are the little things that are going to be picked apart. I just think it is fair to say, and over the course of a day, you can see how the public is sort of perceiving something. So I do think it's fair to say that perhaps the people in Joe Ellis's camp are like, hey, wait a second here. You know, this wasn't, you know, some sort of angry, I hate Mike Shanahan moment. This is probably more like, listen, John, we got to go through a real process here. You know what I'm saying, Al? Like, you can't just
fire Vance Joseph on Friday and hire Mike on Monday.
No.
You interview five people in that time period and make the decision, I guess it looks like you can't fire him on Monday and hire Mike on Tuesday.
You got to go through the process. And the process is tough, Al.
That's good. That's good. You know what? You know what? I will say that because of the way that the Rooney Rule exists, Joe Ellis is right. You have to go through a process.
Right.
But why didn't they want to go through the process? Now, that is something that I can't put my finger on.
Well, I'll make the argument because John Elway didn't fight for it. If John Elway wanted to go through the process, he could have. But if John wants to do that, he's admitting he made a mistake in hiring Vance in the first place.
No.
Oh, yes, he is.
But the story, also says that you get Kirk Cousins with this deal.
Ah, now that's a good part of the story. Now, here's what I believe went on in this one, okay? Woody writes about how Shanahan and Cousins met, but he does not give a specific time. And Mike Kliss wrote, that didn't happen. However, there have been occasions where Kirk Cousins has been through Denver, and maybe a couple of years ago it happened. So here's what I believe happened in this particular case. I think Mike Shanahan and Kirk Cousins have a relationship.
He drafted him.
No duh, right? I believe Kirk Cousins and Mike Shanahan at some point over the past couple of years, Al, sat down and hung out at the restaurant. Alfred, we hung out at the restaurant and Mike Shanahan ended up at our table for a few minutes a couple of years ago. You remember that? I mean, it happens. If you've never been to Shanahan's restaurant, it is a pretty cool place. There's a lot of movers and shakers that sort of drift by your table over the course of time. It's just one of those places in Denver where some power people run into each other. Was that fair to say?
By design.
By design, right. By design and reputation. So it's a pretty cool place to go. Go have dinner over there. You'll see it. By the way, this also happens at Del Frisco's. This also happens at Elway's. This happens in places in town. I mean, there's just places that people meet. So it is beyond reasonable that that Kirk Cousins and Mike Shanahan at some point had a conversation. But to think that it, and Mike's version of it may be a little bit different than, well, what Mike McCartney, Kirk Cousins' agent, may say. Joining us is Adam Schefter, our NFL ESPN insider, brought to you by ROX Heating and Air. That's R-O-X, ROX Heating and Air. The Mike Shanahan story today, Adam, what's your take on it?
I mean, listen, you know, when you're thinking about whether to bring back a coach and you're going through options, I mean, it makes sense to talk to people and see what happens. And doesn't mean that you're doing something or not doing something. Like right now, I'll bet you that they've thought about coaching options. Like it would be unnatural for them to not do that. There are teams that don't make changes that consider options, right? And so John and Mike have a long history. So if they have a conversation where John says, hey, any interest? And Mike says, I'd think about it. Because I don't think Mike's so gung-ho to go coach again. You know, that's not something that he's all ablaze to do. And so, you know, they have a conversation. If we did something, if it didn't work out, would you be interested? Yeah, well, maybe. I don't know. Let me think about it. And so you have these kind of talks. I mean, I think it would almost be unnatural not to have those talks. Now, again, who knows how it would work out, right? And the Broncos decided for whatever reason that Woody Page or Mike Kliss reported on not to do that. Okay, I'll leave that to the Broncos. But if it had happened, the one thing that, you know, I think you could be confident in saying is there's a good chance that Mike would have signed Kirk Cousins at that point in time. And things would have been a little different at that point in time with quarterbacks.
Yeah, I believe Mike had a relationship with Kirk Cousins, Adam, that would lead Mike to believe that if Mike was in a position as a head coach, Cousins would be amenable to being there, even if it was at a little bit of a haircut. So I believe this story has potential legs in Mike's belief in their relationship. That's coming from Mike's side of things, not Kirk Cousins' side of things.
The story had potential legs because Denver did not hire Mike, okay, and Kirk Cousins went to Minnesota. So the window closed on whatever it is. So, again, is it interesting to talk about a year later? Sure. Okay, fine. Definitely. But, again, it didn't happen. Denver didn't make the change. Mike didn't take the job. Okay? Kirk went to Minnesota. So there are a lot of things that are talked about in the league that don't come to fruition. This is one of them. Yes, it is interesting. Yes, it is history. Yes, it's a year old. You know, all those things are true, right? So if the Broncos had offered him the job and if he had taken it, if those two things had got along, and if they decided to get rid of Vance at that time and all those things happened, had Mike gotten hired, I would believe that Kirk would have come to Denver. Yes, I believe that. Now, that's not an automatic because I think Minnesota had an attractive package and Minnesota might have been offering more money, and who knows how Kirk and his wife would feel about being there and all those things. I mean, there's a lot to it, but would Denver have had a greater advantage at signing Kirk in that scenario where all those things? Yes, that would have happened.
You know, the only reason that this is a huge story today, especially in Denver, is because of the way that our quarterback Case Keenum has played, and there are a lot of question marks surrounding the head football coach. And you got to understand, and you know this city as well as anybody, Adam, that when you put those two situations together, it just feels like we could have had a better combination than we have now.
Well, listen, this is what every team goes through, right? When you're making a decision about what to do. And by the way, Denver will do it again this year. Like, are we better off with Vance Joseph and Case Keenum and these assistant coaches and this coordinator and that coordinator? Or are we better off making a change and, you know, we could look at this group of coaches and, like, teams do that every year. Okay? So, yes, And Alfred, it'll happen again this year because there are questions, I think, that this organization has to answer about the direction it wants to go. Is that news? I don't think so. Right? Like, I mean, this is what happens when you have back-to-back losing seasons for the first time in, what is it,
70 tours, man, the 70 tours.
Yeah, okay. So we're talking about 28, 36 years, first time back-to-back season. So, of course, they're going to talk about the direction of the franchise and what's best. Right? Like, hello?
Adam, earlier today, I asked BJ this.
BJ, do you think management has your back?
Yeah, absolutely I do. Absolutely I do.
Do you think management has your back? Pause. Yeah, absolutely. I felt like it's like, you know, when your kid who's like 9 years old says, Dad, is there really a Santa Claus? And you you pause, you think to yourself, is he old enough? And then you say, of course, son. Of course there is. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, D-Mac.
Well, I'm saying, of course, there's a Santa Claus. So for the kids in the car, of course. But that's the impression I got from that answer. So let me ask you, Adam, do you think management has Vance Joseph's back?
Do I think they have Vance Joseph back? Oh, boy. I believe in Santa Claus. Now, you know, listen, I believe management's job is to, again, do what it feels is best for the team. And yes, I believe there are times when it's got Vance's back. And I believe if they feel like they got to go in a different direction, well, they got Vance's back, but they're also going to look at other people's backs. Like, that's the way it goes, right? I mean, everyone looks out for themselves. And they do. Look, when you talk about management, you're talking about Joe Ellis, John Elway, right? Like, who else?
You could go deeper. You go Mac Freeman, for example. I mean, you could Greek. You could go, talk about these guys.
Fine. Put anyone you want into that management category, okay? And ultimately, their job is not to look out for a person, but to make sure that the organization wins.
Right.
And to do whatever they can to make sure that the organization wins. And, if a player is acting up, stepping out of line, if he's a really good player, they're gonna have his back. If he's not a really good player, they might just say you're cut. Right?
Yep.
Right. So do they have that player's back? Well,
depends on how good he is.
Right? How valuable he is. How valuable he is. How productive he is. And so,
I have to ask you the national perspective about Case Keenum.
You know, I think Case has been solid. He's been solid. Like, he hasn't helped the team get to where it wanted to go. They've been decent. Not good enough to make a postseason run. So I don't know. Like, when you say national, so I'm speaking for the national people in this particular case, right? So, and I would say he's been okay. He's been okay so far.
The Baltimore Ravens control their own destiny in terms of making the playoffs right now.
Yep.
Does John Harbaugh's future as head coach depend on them making the playoffs, or has that already been determined one way or the other?
I don't think they have the answer. I think that, you know, you wait and see how the season goes and how it plays out, and then you make your decision. I think that there was an awful lot of noise and smoke about John Harbaugh, so much so that you have to think that something is askew. But I'm still skeptical because if John Harbaugh were on the open market, how quick would it be before another team would want to hire him?
Five seconds.
It would be very quick.
Okay,
and who's Baltimore hiring that's right. Better than John Harbaugh?
Agreed.
Okay, and so people say, well, maybe John doesn't want to stay. Well, I would say to that his daughter is a junior in high school. I don't think he wants to play in Baltimore right now. I think he wants to see his daughter through high school. And even if they get rid of him, then you know, he doesn't have to coach next year if he doesn't want to. He could stay in Baltimore and do whatever. You know, he's done TV before. He could do TV for a year and then get back into coaching. We've seen people do that.
Yep.
So,
yep.
When you say, is he going to be the coach? What are they going to do? Well, again, I know we're late in the season and there's, what, two more weeks left, right? Two more? Yeah. Let's see. You know, there are coaches that'll take their teams of players that could be in trouble for all we know. Mm. Last year we saw Mike Mularkey get the Titans there, win right. a playoff game right. on the road, no less, and still get fired.
Yep.
Adam. So, let's see how it all plays out.
Adam, last thing I have for you is that there has been sentiment around a couple of other coaches that have been talked about in the past of having a make or break year. I remember this happened with Sean Payton. I think ESPN did a good job of chronicling Sean Payton's plight there in New Orleans until they turned it back around this year. And also this year, Ron Rivera, another coach that we'll see later on, and his plight, and he's only four wins away from being the all-time winningest coach in the Carolina Panthers history, and how those teams have stuck with those coaches. When is it when do you decide to move away from a coach if you know that he's a good coach? And do you just fight it through when seasons are tough? Is that the mentality of the NFL owners?
Well, Alfred, first of all, I'm a proponent of stability and staying the course. I think that's always the wiser course of action. And that's why the hiring process is so important. And I think in many ways you could equate this to marriage, right? Like, you know, if you're going to propose to that coach and candidate, you should be prepared to be with that candidate for a long period of time. And how do you know that it's not right? It's like, how do you know when any relationship is not right? There comes a time where you just feel like it's time to make a change and move on. Okay, and that's the part that Denver's got to figure out. Do they want to stay committed? Do they feel like it's time to start a new relationship? And that's what we'll find out here in the next few weeks about what the Broncos decide to do here.
You know, in all honesty, it feels like with Vance Joseph, the Broncos were changing their mind as he was walking down the aisle. You know, like it never really has felt like we're all on this together, as opposed to the situation, Adam, in San Francisco, where it looks like these guys will be together for 50 years.
All Los Angeles with Anthony Lynn.
I know. It just has never felt like
it's
just a perfect
marriage.
I don't know.
Why is that?
Alfred, why
do you think that is? You play for this team and know Vance very well. Why is that?
I can't get the real sentiment of why in the beginning after the signing, but
I do have a reason why. Now that I'm sorry, Al, I'm interrupting. Go ahead. No, here's why. So just to keep it real, okay? Yeah. Too often throughout John Elway's tenure has he made non-thorough decisions, okay? Too often has the decision been made too quickly, and there hasn't been a due diligence in the process. And I think this is what Joe Ellis was more or less calling him on the carpet for. So I think there have been a lot of snap judgments, and John needs to do a better job really, really thinking through what he's doing. And I think that's why. I think this was another example. I think he was proposed Vance Joseph by Gary Kubiak. I don't think they really seriously thought about anybody else. I think they got themselves in a pickle because they interviewed Kyle Shanahan and he blew their doors off, but they were already committed to VJ. I just don't think he's taken the significant amount of time to make the right decisions over his tenure as in his job. So that's why, in my opinion.
I don't think that he rushed to any decisions here. I think that maybe in this particular case, you listen to a lot of other voices and you rely on them more than you rely on your own thinking sometimes. And again, you've got to have a conviction on your own. I don't think it's rushing. They didn't rush. I don't think they rushed to hire Vance Joseph. They went through and they interviewed other candidates and they had the opportunity to change their mind. But there were certain people that felt very strongly that they go in this direction. And so that's what they decided to do. There's a lot of instantaneous decisions in football, hiring a coach, drafting somebody while you're on the clock, the player you want goes. You have to be quick to audible at the line of scrimmage. John's capable of doing that. And he's done that throughout his entire life. I don't subscribe to your theory, D-Mac, with all due respect. I just think sometimes in life, sometimes you hear a lot of voices, and ultimately, you got to stay true to your voice.
All right, great stuff as always, Adam. We really appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
Thank you. Adam Schefter, ESPN NFL Insider, brought to you by Rocks Heating and Air. When we come back, all sorts to... Boy, big, big, big day on all sorts of levels. We got the big three next.
Sandy Clef here to tell you about SCL Mortgage Special Circumstance Lending, locally owned and operated. And if you're self-employed or work on commission, this is the place for you. Bank statement loans are back. You don't need tax returns to do your loan. In some cases, the bank statement loans can be done with credit scores in the low 600s. MySpecialMortgage.com on the web, 303-790-2222. The phone number, SCL Mortgage, licensed by the Colorado Department of Regulatory Agencies, number 1200716.
It's Big Al and D-Mac with the Big Three.
Story number one, this.
To back this up to 29. 2-for-2 so far for McManus. And he makes it 3-for-3 on the night. 4:36 left.
Right decision or wrong decision, kick the field goal instead of going for it on 4th and 1.5 or so.
I say kick the field goal. If you kick the field goal there with one stop, you need roughly, you know, 40 yards no matter where you are, no more than 60 no matter where you are to get in the field goal range. And we got the football back after terrible hat placement by Adam Gotsis that put him in the hole, and he worked himself out of the hole, and it gave Nick Chubb a huge run. If we would have got a stop there, D-Mac, we could have got the ball back with, you know, before the two-minute warning. As it worked out, we got the ball back at 140, and that should have been enough time for Case Keenum to work his magic.
I'll say wrong decision, but we'll discuss it more in detail coming up. Bongos.
Three!
What did you learn about Case Keenum after being challenged by his head football coach? On Friday, I said that, you know, D-Mac, I don't like the Broncos' chances to win this game because Case Keenum is going to put the ball in the air. And when he does, he's going to be intercepted at least once. He ended up being intercepted twice in that game. And one of them came on first down.
Yeah.
What do you think about Case Keenum being challenged and how he reacted to it?
Yeah, I think this.
Garrett's pressure picked up. Keenum has to throw it. Something goes up in the air, and it is intercepted by Jabril Peppers.
That's what I think. We all knew it was going to happen, right? I mean, you know, one thing doesn't come without the other. So the problem is there aren't enough better throws to overcome the mistakes. So I thought that was exactly what was going to happen, Alfred. Exactly. Because we've been through this. It's not Case Keenum's fault.
It's not his fault.
We understand.
And you know what?
And
I'm not going to blame it on him.
No. It's
you're asking a guy to do something that he is not capable of doing. So, you know, you keep on banging your head on the wall trying to get a result from a guy who cannot give you those results. It's beyond me. But, you know, the head coach is in evaluation mode. Maybe we have to evaluate whether or not asking Case Keenum to do the things that he can't do is part of the process. Bongos.
That's a tough one because
he's
your quarterback. I mean,
yeah, but there should be like prerequisites at the quarterback position that we shouldn't even have to talk about, like throwing the ball down the field and giving your receiver a chance.
Well,
not throwing it into double coverage and getting it intercepted.
Well, the Broncos have been better off with Mike Shanahan and Kirk Cousins. We'll get to that coming up next.
It's a Reaction Monday, brought to you by First Bank with Big Al and D-Mac.
Baby, it looks like it's going to help.
Us about kicking field goal on 4th and 1 over the past couple of days, 49.
I have not. It was the right move for our football team, right? So I watched a 3rd down play, and it didn't look good. And it was more than 4th and 1 in my opinion. I'm watching the spot, so I took the field goal. You know, we had 4:35 left with 2 timeouts and a 2-minute warning. And our defense is playing good football. You know, and my thought was to at least, you know, go 3 or 4 or 5 plays and get the ball back and still have 3 minutes to get a field goal to win. So that was the right call for our football team.
The problem is, analytically, it was the most disastrous call since 2011. According to Edge Sports, Al, which is an analytics company that does this type of thing, reading from a Deadspin article, Edge Sports puts that the field goal put the Broncos' game-winning chance at 26.7%. Going for it would have given Denver a game-winning chance of 59.8%. Edge Sports tweeted out, the decision to kick the field goal instead of going for it on fourth and one in that situation is the largest error on record, a 33.1% game-winning chance error. This is from 2011. So, Al, what's your reaction to all of that?
These are your analytic people, right?
That's right.
And you find that at where? Edge of Sports? Edge Sports?
What? Twitter handle is EDJ Sports. It's Edge Sports, EDJ Sports. So on Twitter, at EDJ Sports. And I'm reading from an article in Deadspin.
Okay. So this is what I'll tell you about that situation. We had, in that game, our most talented player. Who's our most talented player on offense?
Emmanuel Sanders. Active player, Phillip Lindsay.
Wait a minute.
Phillip Lindsay.
In your opinion, Emmanuel Sanders is more dynamic than Phillip Lindsay?
Overall, yeah, but he wasn't available.
On the field,
Phillip Lindsay.
Okay. What kind of day was Phillip Lindsay having?
Terrible. Horrible day.
Okay. What kind of day was Case Keenum having?
Case Keenum day. Average day.
No. Case Keenum usually doesn't throw two interceptions in a game, not here of late.
Okay. So you're saying it's a bad day?
It was a bad... Can you call Case Keenum's day a good day?
Al, what do you think about it? You're asking me questions that you have answers to. So go ahead.
I'm giving you the rundown in the game. When we tried to run the football, we couldn't. And when we threw the football, our quarterback was indecisive and threw two interceptions. So you asking me, what should we do there? We give ourselves a chance to win the football game by kicking the field goal, going back on defense, trying to get a stop, and making something happen so that we can get another field goal.
That makes zero logical sense. You're within the red zone. You have an offense that's not really working.
4 minutes and 20-plus seconds. Hold on. You asked me a question. 4 minutes and 20-something seconds left with two timeouts.
Uh-huh.
Okay? You get a stop on third down, you get out the game, and then you get the football back.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm thinking.
But you just said Case Keenum was having a bad day, as was Phillip Lindsay.
But you have the whole field, D-Mac. You got the whole field to run to get to the 35 to the 40-yard line. You got the entire field. When you are constricted to a red zone area, everybody is in that little one area, and they can jam up. And do you believe in our receivers? Do you believe in the quarterback? Who do you believe in that situation when Phillip Lindsay's not having a good day?
I believe in anybody in terms of getting 1 yard rather than driving the ball down the field.
Who do you believe in right now?
Anybody. Matt LaCosse. Anybody for 1 yard. Okay. I believe we have a lot of players on our team that could get 1 yard.
Really?
Compared
to against that defense
but
on Saturday.
Al, you're advocating that it's easier for the Broncos to drive for 40 yards than it is to convert on 1 yard.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm doing, because we had this same conversation just last week. I think we had this conversation on Wednesday or Thursday when I was trying to explain to you the mentality behind a four down, having a four down mentality versus a three down mentality. If you score a field goal, you stop them, it's going to inevitably force the Cleveland Browns to punt the football. They're not going to go for it on fourth down and two in negative territory. So your mentality is right. But nobody could have seen Adam Gotsis jumping out of his hole, giving up a lane to let Nick Chubb run for 40 or 50 yards. Nobody saw that happening. But okay.
So you disagree with the analytics people and all their stuff.
I say when
because they're saying this was the largest mistake since 2011. Now, it's not even debatable about what should have happened.
Do they know what was happening in the game?
Yes, they're looking at all of that stuff.
Oh, so they're looking at Case Keenum, who had a quarterback rating of that day of 60.8.
Okay,
they're looking at Phillip Lindsay, who had 14 carries for 24 yards.
You know, it's kind of a weird conversation because you have more confidence in them getting 40 yards than 1 yard.
Yeah, because you have the entire field. You have the entire field.
Huh?
You have the entire field in that situation.
Well, how did it work out?
Well, apparently we don't have the quarterback for that.
They couldn't do it. It would have been, at the end of the day, it would have been easier to get 1 yard than 40 yards.
I was okay with it. As it was happening, I was more than okay with it because of how much time we had left and the timeouts we had remaining.
All right. Can you understand the other side, though? Can you understand people
No, because of
you
look,
can't?
Look,
you really, D-Mac, hold on. D-Mac. You can't even understand other people and another point of view on this?
Do I understand it? I don't think it. I understand it, but I don't think it's logical when you look at what we were doing that day.
Even though there's an analytics department that says it was way easier for the Broncos to gain an advantage with by going
minutes,
for it.
With 4 minutes and 20-plus seconds, what is it, 425, you just put the Cleveland Browns in automatic four-down territory when they got down. If they're up by one, then if you get a three and out and stop, they're going to punt the football, dude. They're going to punt it.
Okay. All right. I think Vance, by the way, you and Vance are in the minority on this one. You know, in terms of.
Because we lost. We lost, so, you know, we lost the football game. So.
You realize the Broncos were 5-for-7 on fourth down the week before.
Oh, my goodness. What kind of week do we have last week?
A week that we went 5-for-7 on fourth down.
Yeah, but what kind of week did we have? Did we have a turnover free? Did we run the football? What kind of week do we have last week?
I don't know where you're going. I don't know what to say. We lost.
What I'm telling you is.
But we were 5-for-7 on fourth down.
What I'm telling you is this. When you are calling offense and when you are calling defense and special team plays, it's all predicated on whether or not you believe that you can get the first down one way or the other. Now, if you believe that you can get it, you go for it. If you don't believe that you're going to get it, kick the field goal.
Okay. Well, VJ hasn't changed his mind over 48 hours. You feel strongly about it.
And I'm not. And
there's
and
a bunch
I'm
of nerds that think it was a colossal mistake.
Listen, I'm here to tell you this. I'm here to tell you this.
I think
okay?
It was a mistake. Yes.
I'm here to tell you this.
What?
And you know how I feel about the computer guys, the analytics guys.
Yeah.
At times, they can be very helpful. And, you know, I think that you have to consider all that you are given from the analytics people. But also, you got to know your football club. You got to know whether or not you believe in your group to go out there and get a yard, a little over a yard and a half. You have to believe that.
When we come back.
You don't believe that, though, huh? You believe in the analytics. Hey, what are we going to do? We're going to take our rookie wide receivers, put them out there with a quarterback who has no confidence in them, and throw them the football in a fourth and one situation. And then you're going to say, why didn't you give the ball to Phillip Lindsay? Because he was averaging 1.7 yards a carry.
I believe inherently it's easier to get 1 yard no matter what the field position is than 40 yards. That's what I believe. What can I tell you?
With time?
Yeah. Yeah.
With time?
Yes.
That makes no sense. Everybody plays a prevent style defense when you're up.
What can I tell you? That's how crazy I am. I get 1 yard. Oh, I'd go for it on fourth down all the time.
Yeah, you know what? You'd be trolled by everybody
way,
in Denver, Colorado on those times or you didn't
that's
make
fine
it.
By me. And by the way, it was a weird decision based on the fact that VJ was advocating for Case to be more aggressive. So he's telling his quarterback to be more aggressive, and then when it was in a situation for him to be more aggressive, they took a much more conservative approach.
31 for 48, he averaged 5.4 yards a pass. He threw the ball for no touchdowns, two interceptions, and was sacked two times for 19. And one of those came in the biggest moment of the game, and his QBR was slightly better than the rookies.
When we come back, football at 4, what a day. Should Mike Shanahan have been the coach? And what is going on with the infighting within the Broncos themselves? Details next.